Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Future Mycelium Podcast, Mushroom After Hours. And boy, aren't we not long overdue. And for that, I feel a need to apologize. This is the 12th and final episode of the Future Mycelium Podcast, and the intention was to upload this on time and then take my break. The thing is, spring break crept up on me. I had my kid at home. I'm a mom, you know, I'm an expat mom living overseas, you know, my support is a little bit limited, and when I have my mom duties going on, it's hard for me to focus on anything else. And obviously, delivering information and value to all of you mushroom heads, all of you beautiful beings, is something that takes a lot of time, effort, and focus to deliver something valuable worth listening to. And I just don't want to sit down and talk to you all about things if I don't have anything to say because I haven't done the research. So had I created this episode on time, it wouldn't have been worthy in my eyes, in my creator's eyes. And if you're a little curious too as to what we're going to be discussing today, let me just lay that out quick. We're going to be talking a little bit about anecdotally. Yes, I have an anecdote of my own personal experience of creating this podcast over the past 3, 4, 5, 6 months, I guess. I've averaged 2 episodes per month, and this is the 12th episode, right? So for half a year, I have been birthing the Future Mycelium podcast. And alongside that, I have been self-directing this course from Julia Cameron titled The Artist's Way. I wanted to discuss a little bit about the synchronicities and all of the beautiful things that came out of working with that book alongside creating this podcast episode, because I have a hunch that many of you who are listening to podcasts feel very inspired but have yet to start something yourself. And we all know that one of the other ways I show up in this life, I'm purpose driven, is to help other people decide to step into what they're meant to be doing. What is their birthright in this lifetime? So I want to talk a little bit about mine, hoping that my story will be inspiring to you. And of course, that's going to be related. It has everything to do with mushrooms because this podcast is here because I started that course alongside the fungal allies I've been eating, ingesting, taking for a couple of years. We're also going to be talking about some polypore underdogs, some medicinal polypores that get overshadowed by Ganoderma lucidum, reishi. And if you are new to the podcast, someone recommended my podcast to you and you're just starting with this one and you're like, wait, I don't know a whole lot about reishi. Fear not. Pause maybe now or listen now and then go listen to episode 5. And that's about reishi answering the jungle cat's call. And that is actually, fun fact, all of you, the most played podcast episode. It seems as though many of you wellness gods and goddesses are out here, okay, going and getting your best medicinal mushroom life. And for that, you are highly applauded and I pay attention. So best you believe that today is about more medicinal mushrooms, okay? Not psychedelic mushrooms, but nonetheless, I've got questions, I've got inklings, I've got some answers. And this is also going to be an episode that's going to sort of paint a picture of what season 2 is going to look like, because I feel drawn podcast episode after episode after episode. It leads me down new avenues and I get new questions from creating something. Wanting to represent different aspects of our cultures across the world and sharing that ancestral, sometimes oftentimes indigenous, perhaps aboriginal knowledges that we are trying to revive, right? And attribute properly to the right authors. Yeah, so we're talking about underdogs today, and we're going to be talking about mushrooms and women's health. Women, are you a woman? Specifically those women's that can birth, or rather bodies that can birth, that can menstruate, that will become perimenopausal and menopausal, and go through that whole very natural yet extremely delicate and intricate and intuitive cycle of life that is womanhood. Get it? Not womanhood, but the having of a womanhood womb. Yeah, it's been a minute since I made an episode, but we're just kind of pushing through here. The other thing too is you're noticing probably that the last episode, she was a little choppy. I do have a whoopsie poopsie, as one might say. I have a correction to say, and you might have noticed if you listened to episode 11, I was about to say how you could contact me for business inquiries or just get in touch with me. And I was like, and my email is, and then I just cut it off because I'm using bless their heart, and also God bless in the most sincere way, anchor.fm, which is Spotify's podcast platform. And also the reason why I'm here and I navigated to this platform during episode 11 was because my other computer that had all of my delicate software for creating what I would like to say the auditory cinematic experience of the Future Mycelium podcast, it crapped out on me, and I'm in need of new technology. And in the meantime, I'm sort of needing to MacGyver my system here at the expense of doing extraneous preferred sound engineering to the episode. So if you're noticing this episode's different, please chill out. I'm telling myself this because I have expectations of what I want this to sound like for all of you. But there's not much intro, as you might have noticed in the last episode. The music's a little different, but we're getting by with what we have. And hopefully, getting into season two, we'll be able to be back up and running using the software that was being used before. But, you know, we're figuring it out. Before we talk a little bit more about housekeeping and then get into this episode today, I just want to reintroduce myself as this last episode and say hello, genuine, sincere hellos to all of you out there. And I want to say this because I don't check obsessively, but I did check today as I was recording, and I realize week by week, you know, I have more listeners, more people are tuning in. And that's the beautiful, beautiful thing about podcasts is that you find something that you just binge listen to, right? And you're like, all of the people in my immediate circle, I assume, will resonate with what I'm listening to the same degree as me. So you go tell your friends about your favorite podcast episodes. That's how I get my episodes. Sometimes I find them based on taste and based on like Spotify's supremely bizarre AI algorithm technology will sometimes recommend things to me, and I'm like, oh, this does hit. But most of the time, I'm looking for that cottage core, homey, earthy, heard it from a friend recommendation. That feels synchronous. That feels synchronistic. My vocabulary, my English today, you know, you can tell my brain's been scrambled at home as a mother, but we're getting by, like we said. I really love that the podcast is growing seemingly organically. And the other reason why I know that is because I don't yet have a website. I have a YouTube channel with some vlogs on it, but it's not like dedicated YouTube content in this present moment. It's mostly the podcast. It's a little bit of Instagram and sometimes a little bit of Instagram marketing, but not much. So those of you who are coming in, I see you, I hear you, I'm resonating with that call that you have alongside me to get to know your fungal allies better. And that's what I'm all about. That's a real long-winded roundabout way of saying, hi, my name is Jenna Masomi. I am a fungal educator, way shower, a little bit of, I'm like the Spice Girls all wrapped up into one, okay? You've got a little part mushroom education, a little bit of valuable hands-on knowledge, a little bit of mythological Jungian storytelling so that you can cement this dense mycological knowledge into your psyche, a little bit of spiritual, intuitive, medium-esque energy, you know? It's a little bit of something for everybody, but also might be a lot of something for other, something a lot of people aren't interested in. And those who aren't interested in mushrooms, in my opinion, I hope you get to a place where this is something that gives you life, because mushrooms do give life. They recycle life. They they help us live our best lives. I live, laugh, love mushrooms. And those of you who are listening, I'm assuming you do too. If you do want to connect with me online, like I said, right now, podcast, Instagram, and YouTube through my link tree on my Instagram. I've got two accounts that I'm running here. I've got the Future Mycelium account, and this is checking in with the podcast, visual aids for the podcast, some updates on my mushroomy life, some reels. I'm trying to get into it. You know, it's like I love podcasting. I can sit down and bring you all this knowledge, and like then there's all these other ways we can show up on the internet to build an audience, and it's like, what is my energy best spent doing? You know, digital marketing is something I'm still learning, but nonetheless, you can find me at thefuture.mycelium on Instagram. And then we got a bonus Instagram account, okay? This one's called @mushroomaffirmations, and it's exactly what it sounds like. Easily digestible content, short form content, is very popular on social media. We all have the attention span of about 7 seconds now, thanks to TikTok. So I have created that platform for people to easily digest for free mushroom affirmations that are supposed to uplift them and perhaps nudge them out of their matrices, whatever matrices that be. And those are pictures of mushrooms. And I create captions or quotes, or rather, like sometimes just affirmations derived from quotes. And I get mycological photographers to consent to me using their photos to put my screenshot text onto, but it does slap, and that account is growing month by month as well. Two places to find me and my mycological energies. And if you do, we're not going to cut this off because I'm not going to edit this out on accident. My business email is futuremyceliumpod@gmail.com. It's funny because as soon as I finished saying what the email was, my son came downstairs and I had to pause while I was recording, but I made sure to finish. That's again, though, let me just say it again. futuremyceliumpod@gmail.com. There you can send me questions, comments, inquiries, send me your mushroom photos, send me your foraging stories. I keep asking for this and no one's listening, because here's the thing. I know what all of you guys are doing. You listen, you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to email her. I'm going to send her my photos. I'm going to tell her about that freaky time I was foraging for mushrooms in the forest. And then y'all forget. How many of y'all got, I don't want to armchair diagnose, but how many of y'all got ADHD? We all have very splintered off focus and we're all fighting for the focus of others online. But I'm saying right now, put in your notepad. If you've been thinking about writing to me, whether it's through a review to send me your favorite story, send me pictures of the mushrooms that you find, and you were going to do it and you're setting aside a day, put in your calendar next Sunday. I'm sitting down and I'm sending Jenna the things I've meant to send to her, because you have no idea how much I will appreciate seeing what you want to send me about your stories, what you're liking about the podcast, those rare mushrooms you found, or mushrooms you're growing. Okay. We've got a listener and someone specifically who's into the mushroom affirmations page, who's been sending me photos of all of his mushroom spawn. And it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's giving homegrown vibes. It's giving urban farming vibes. It's giving rise against the machine vibes. So please, you will be doing such a service to me and to other people by sharing the stories. If you're like, oh, she won't like it, or other people aren't going to care. No, we will. Okay. And if you have a story that you don't think that's that interesting, only like tangentially interesting, I can embellish it for you. Just consent to me talking about on the podcast, because that's what I also want the next season to be about. It's not just about me talking to you. It's about you talking to me and then me talking to everyone about what you told me. You feel me? You hear what I'm saying? So pencil it in, grab your iPhone. Those Android users, we love you too. Go and pencil it in. Set aside that time and let me know what's going on in your neck of the woods. Okay. So as far as that other housekeeping, we are actually closing shop here for a minute. And you might be like, Jenna, you closed shop for 3 weeks already, and it's not even the end of this season. I'm sorry. Okay. I genuinely am sorry if an apology is needed. Maybe apologizing to myself because I couldn't get that last episode out on time. But hey, I kept a schedule. I self-directed a routine for this podcast. So I'm very proud of myself. I have to grease my own tires here, okay? And extend a little olive branch of compassion from my right hand to my left hand. I'm passing it over to myself. And that life happens. Things get in the way. And I'd rather make something good when the time is right than make something bad at a forced time. And isn't that how everything goes? But yes, after this episode, we're closing shop so we can actually, ironically, open shop. The Future Mycelium podcast, this entity, Future Mycelium, is not an officially registered business yet. It does not have a website. It does not have artistic offerings and other insight in a blog that it totally needs to have. So I'm going to be taking the next 1 to 2 months, and I'm going to try to, I'm telling all of you all to pencil in, sending me your foraging stories. Here, I'm going to hear that. My pen. Make a schedule for mushroom online presence, right? Okay, so that's what we've got going on here. We've been having a really great time. We have been enjoying the Future Mycelium podcast, and it has fruitioned. Is that a word? I feel like I'm making up so many words right now. But it has come to fruition, and it is here to stay, okay? Everything that's been created, you put something out there, you can never get rid of it, okay? Future Mycelium exists, and it needs to be more solidified in the existence that she deserves, okay? I have a lot of visions, but what right now I'm promising is a website. I'm not sure if I want to do merch, guys. I make a lot of art. And it's not like I want to do like chintzy, cheesy merch, you know, like the merch where like landfill energy. That's the thing that I don't like about, like, I love it because it empowers smaller creators to create an income from all of the effort that they're putting into what they're passionate about. But I also want to create things that aren't going to get like tossed in a year. Something that you can cherish and value, you know, that's more what I'm about, because it's easy to go consume anything from wish.com. You can go to AliExpress and order your favorite mushroom garden gnomes, which I would love it if someone sent me one of those. I'm just going to put that out there. But yeah, I want what I create to be something that, you know, as someone who's trying to courier messages of the earth and to get us back into the language of nature. Yeah. Also go buy my petroleum based plastic thermos made with toxins or something. You feel me? So trying to envision that intersection between different digital offerings for all of you that you guys will actually enjoy, that's either compostable or something you'll hold on to forever, that's not going to harm the environment beyond repair. You know, a lot of us have climate anxiety. That's something that was one of the biggest reasons why I made this podcast in general, was to alleviate my anxiety by way of taking action in my own small way. So I'd rather not collapse into myself by paradoxically creating something that's going to trash the planet for the sake of making money. I said what I said. But nonetheless, I have had visions of like different kinds of like hoodies. But not just like print-on hoodies, like maybe embroidered hoodies, ones that would be more expensive. Y'all, I'm fielding this. Y'all, let me know what you think. The kind of hoodie that I like, I'm thinking about a hoodie I don't have that I would want that could be Future Mycelium-based, like Balenciaga vibes, but Future Mycelium. I actually love ceramics artists. So I'm wondering if I could maybe do a collab with ceramics artists. And I've also found a couple different dropshipping companies that could do justice to what I'm envisioning. Stickers, stationery, and then I'm also picturing workbooks. Like, I have a whole mind's eye of stuff. And at the heart of it is to remind you of the language of nature, to remind you that mushrooms are there. They're listening to you. They're talking amongst themselves. And I want that to be something that brings you as much joy as it brings me on a daily basis. I want you to feel as supported by mushrooms as I do. And I want whatever I offer to be an extension of that excitement. So we're still at the drawing board. And then more than anything, I'd like to take the podcast episodes I have, put them into blog formats, and start blogging as well. So just trying to take her to the next level. The other thing too was actually Patreon. Now, the thing is, I've dabbled in Patreon before. I'm sorry if this is getting a little boring. Feel free to skip ahead a few minutes if you're tired of housekeeping and you want to get into the mushroom of it all. But for those of you that want to support me, I have a few different access points to me right now. But in the past, I've tried Patreon, but it was on a different platform. I didn't really know what my purpose was, and I hadn't seen enough Patreons doing what they do successfully. But I do see that podcasters have a really good time with Patreon. People want to support them through Patreon, whether it's $5, $10, $30 a month, depending on what else you can offer. My only hesitancy is like, over-promising, under-delivering. It's always better psychologically to under-promise and over-deliver. But having a platform to build community for those of you who like Future Mycelium to talk amongst one another, maybe digital art offerings or sticker offerings, things like that. But a Patreon could be a good way to support me, because at this point, you know, I need to make some money from what I'm doing. And this has been a labor of love for like ever. And a lot of us podcasters are just doing it because we love it. But I'd love it. And I'd also love to be able to pay bills at the same time. Wouldn't we all? So these are the things that I'm trying to really summon into the existence of this lifetime right now. That's what we got going on. So I have to take a step away from making the content to do back end stuff. Back end. Is anyone else take an inventory on their back ends lately. That's what I got to do. Future Mycelium needs to get her back end polished. Anything else? I don't think I have any other corrections beyond what I listened, because I do re-listen to my episodes. It's weird. I find my own voice strangely extremely therapeutic, and I don't know if that's narcissistic or a neurodivergent trait or what, but I re-listened. I heard what I said. I heard how I stuttered, and I have atoned for it. I don't think there's much else. I've told you where to find me. I told you what I'm about. And I've just word vomited some of my thoughts to you about what I'd like to do with Future Mycelium. So I think let's get this out of the way. This has been about 15 minutes, 20 minutes now of housekeeping and all of that. So let's jump in to what I've been finding in the forest. Let's get into talking about our polypore underdogs. Let's talk about women's health. And let's talk about The Artist's Way. By Julia Cameron. Sorry, I just hit my microphone and I was like, oh wait, I can't be doing as much editing as I normally do because let's just consider we're live today, okay? So anything you hear, it's authentic. It's coming up in the moment. And maybe this isn't a test to my improvisational skills. Let's get into it. Okay, I'm done. I'm done stuttering over my words. All right, so underdogs, polypores of the forest. The other day I was out for a hike. I was doing a trail hike and I came across a couple fallen trees, and along those fallen trees, some still standing deadwood trees. And dead trees or fallen trees are a dead giveaway to white and brown rot fungi. That means you're going to be finding your fomentarius, that's your hoof fungi. You're going to be finding your hoof fungi. You're going to be finding your Ganoderma aplanatum. That's, I believe that's how you say it. That's your artist conch. You're going to be finding your fomes, what is it called? I know that the red bracket polypore. Let me just look it up. Red banded polypore. Its scientific name is Fomatopsis pinnicola. You're going to be finding these in the forest. And here's the thing. Capitalism, the mainstream, the emergent mushroom renaissance is definitely highlighting some big key game players in the medicinal mushroom world. And then there's all of these other mushrooms that are, well, they're let alone, like, first of all, there are many mushrooms that have yet to even be identified. There are mushrooms that have been identified, but they have not been researched thoroughly enough. And then you've got the ones that have been researched enough. And the ones that have been researched enough have validity to them to be sold in tinctures, in decoctions, in extracts, in teas, in powders. And reishi is one of those big hitters, right? Thing is, reishi, it grows across the world, but I wouldn't say it's the easiest one to find all the time, especially not in my neck of the woods. But there are other ones that do have very promising research, although it might be limited, and very powerful benefits as teas, your own homemade tinctures, and things like that. Part of mushroom and mycological agency for a person is not just about giving you the information and telling you where you can go buy it and spend $50 on a tincture, which I love to do that sometimes. It's also about you knowing how to go out and identify something, knowing how it might be beneficial to you. And maybe also, I like to say, intuiting that you're meant to be working with one of these polypores in a medicinal way, and that you picked it yourself. You went out of your way to make the tincture yourself. That can add to the magic and the intention, the spiritual intention behind it. I firmly, truly believe that. So actually I have sitting across the room here, I have two hoof fungi. I've got a tiny one and I got a handful sized one. And then I have quite a large red banded polypore, Fomatopsis pinnicola. Now the Fomatopsis pinnicola, if you look at photos of it, especially in its youth, it looks a lot like reishi. I actually found one in the forest the other day. And it could only be no more than a year old. It was a baby one. It looked a lot like reishi, but it wasn't reishi. It was red-banded polypore, red bracket polypore. Both of those names are fine. Those are the common names. You could make up your own new common name for it. And as long as you know that's what it is, that's its name, right? The red-banded polypore is one of those underdogs. It's kind of everywhere in the forest. And one of those other things too, psychologically, if it's just there, you see it every day, it's almost like you don't want it because you could have it whenever. But also, you might be sleeping on it, okay? Same thing with the artist conch. The artist conch. Now, the artist conch grows on more types of trees than the red-banded polypore. Red-banded polypore is typically going to grow on pine trees. It grows on about 100 different host species, but the artist conch is going to grow on even more types of trees. Now, the two of them don't look exactly the same. The artist conch is more... It varies from gray to brown, and it usually does not have this super distinctive red belt you're going to find with a red-belted polypore. You can tell it's a red-belted polypore by the way it is. You can tell it's an aspen by the way it is. But the red-banded polypore, exactly every year, is growing a new band, and that fresh band is going to be white on the edge, and then it's going to have its red band, and then as it grows in its next growth cycle, its next growth spurt, if you will, that red band is going to, I don't know if it's oxidating or what, but it's going to turn some varying shade of brown, light brown, reddish brown, dark brown. I've even seen it be like this deep purpley reddish brown, and that's as it gets closer, those bands are closer to the tree versus the bands that are further away from the tree. But when it's young, girl, put it next to a Ganoderma lucidum, next to Miss Reishi, and you're not going to know the difference. And then the artist conch, its scientific name actually is Ganoderma, but it's not Ganoderma lucidum, it's Ganoderma aplanatum. I'm just going to double check with that. Artist conch, aplanatum. In Ganoderma appellatia, Ganoderma app. Yeah, I was saying it right. It doesn't feel like a real word when it comes out of your mouth. Ganoderma aplanatum, artist bracket or artist conch. The reason why it's called that is because the underside, its pores, it's very, very delicate to touch. It's easy to bruise and you can draw on them in super detailed ways. So if you go and grab yourself a little twig, you can flip her upside down and you can draw anything you want. You could write like zodiac killer signs on the bottom of it. You know, you could trick somebody into saying you found this ancient artist conch and look at these are glyphs. These are runes, you know, or you could just put your grocery list on the bottom of it. You know, if you got a big enough one, because the thing is with the Ganoderma, I'm so nervous to say it, is artist conch. Okay. You go get yourself an artist conch. Some of these, like one of the dead giveaways, for these, and I'm not saying this is the only polypore that grows massively in its size, like huge, but these can get ginormous, like an armful, like you're carrying it home and it looks like a bedside table. That's how big these things can get. So I'm just saying you could get a big enough one and then you could do some, you know, Sistine Chapel type ceiling art on it or something, and then sell it on eBay and make a pretty penny and then live off of that for a couple of years. I don't know. Go manifest your life because you bought an artist conch. They're very artist friendly. Red-banded polypores on the bottom, they're much tougher. And the thing with getting one of these guys, and I'm not a good example of this. I haven't actually done anything with the one that was offered to me in the forest. It's still just sitting there looking pretty, but you can actually just use these for decoration. If you just want to go to IKEA or go whatever to a hardware store or craft store and get some double-sided Velcro sticky, you know, hanging action type thing, you can put them on and make it look like it's growing out of the wall and no one will be any the wiser. You could say, yeah, it's weird. This thing just kind of started growing out of my wall one day and I'm just going with it. It could be like a party trick or something. But we are going to be talking about how to make tinctures with them, both of these, just in general, how to do mushroom extracts. I think this is knowledge that gives huge agency to a person. I want you to know how to do it because it's actually not that difficult. But yeah, the bottom side of the red-banded polypore, Miss Red-Banded Polly, she's tough. Okay, she's tough as nails. Like you need an axe. You need a, I don't know, you need a mortar and pestle. You need something to smash this. And you have to be quite brutal with it, especially if you let her sit to dry out. I don't know, you could use this as foundation for your home, which is actually something maybe we'll talk about next season is mycotechnologies and mycotech and using mycelium to grow furniture because that's actually a thing. But polypore, this red-banded polypore, she's tough. But when you first pick her, I assume all mushrooms are of divine feminine energetic origins, okay? You pick her, you're going to want to dice her up and get her into small pieces as soon as possible, unless you are practicing to be an axe murderer or something and you want to save it for later. But before we talk about tinctures, I also want to talk about Fomes fomentarius. Okay, that one's an easy name to remember, much easier than Ganoderma aplanatum. Try saying that five times. I'm going to do that. Ganoderma aplanatum, Ganoderma aplanatum, Ganoderma aplanatum, Ganoderma aplanatum. Okay, wow, I said that four times fast, but still, that was pretty good. My first language is English, and you can tell. But yeah, Miss Fomes fomentarius. What is this, a beauty pageant, like toddlers and tiaras? I'm here today with my five-year-old daughter. Her name's Fomes fomentarius, and today she just drank her Mountain Dew, and she's about to go on stage, and she's going to go do twirl. So long she doesn't punch one of them judges in the face, she's going to be getting her trophy today. Yes, Miss Fomes fomentarius, she is called Hoof Fungi because she does be looking like horse hoof. She's serving horse hoof, horse girl energy. Watch out. The thing is with Fomes fomentarius, I haven't done much research about its medicinal properties, although I would bet that you could turn it into a tincture if you want. Admittedly, today I can't bring you any knowledge about like deathly polypores or like ones that are toxic. The only thing I can say about it is that every person has their own variabilities with sensitivities to different type of fungi, different types of mushrooms. So you got a guinea pig on yourself in small doses. Well, I'll keep my eye out. I'll keep my feelers out there for you guys about like which polypores might be like lethal, but you never really hear about polypores being lethal. Inedible, yes. And I'd say like all of these polypores we're talking about today, they're not exactly edible because they're usually really tough. Although if you do find an artist conch or a freshly fruited new ring of red banded polypore ring, you can actually, it oftentimes is soft enough that you can kind of just pull that part off. You don't necessarily always need to cut like pull off the entire bracket, it's called, like the entire mushroom. You can cut off the soft, freshly grown part and then cook with that if you want to. But typically, the entirety of that polypore, especially if you find it in the middle of the winter, she's frozen. She's very stiff, okay? She's rigid. She has boundaries. but if in a fresh fruiting season with the polypores, because every polypore has their fruiting season, when it's freshly grown, it is soft and you can cut that off and you're not, that it will continue to grow. They'll be like, oh, I guess we're back to where we started. I guess I'll just grow this ring again for next year. And, you know, that you get to have your cake and eat it too. You could come back every year and cut off the same strip. Okay. But yeah, red banded polys, they're a bit tough. But yeah, Fomes fomentarius, hoof fungi. That's what we're talking about next. I don't want to derail too much. She is known for being able to carry tinder. And today I was saging my room and I was getting into the zone and I was doing some of my spiritual woo-woo. You know, I was, you know, self-care, checking in on the spiritual realms, going into myself, recharging inwardly, and decided to sage my room. And then I looked over at the two Fomes fomentarii. That's the plural, right? Fomentary. I have a tiny one and then I had a medium-sized one. I was like, you know what? What if I like kind of smudged my room with this? Is this cultural appropriation I'm unaware of? I'm like, that doesn't matter. I feel a calling to burn this because the thing with this and also other kinds of polypores, like the red-banded polypore, because they get so dry and they're very stable with holding a tinder or like holding an ember. Not like they don't burst into flames, but they hold an ember and they can burn deep inside. So you can like carry it on the outside of your pack or something like that, or have like a safe way to kind of carry it so that the thing, the container that it's in won't burn. And you could carry your Fomes across the globe. So Utsi, the Iceman, he had that with him when they found him in the ice, probably for tinder purposes. And perhaps also for medicinal purposes. But I did not for this episode today do any research about the medicinal properties of Fomes fomentarius. So I grabbed her today. I started with the little one and I'm like, you know, this is not big enough. I don't like holding this tiny little hoof and being like, am I going to burn my fingers? So I grabbed the bigger one and I held it up to a candle. And it took a few seconds to see it. I was kind of just superficially burning the outer part. But then like the inner layers kind of caught, not fully caught fire, but they caught ember, okay? And it was amazing. The smell of the Fomes fomentarius burning, I feel like I was accessing the Akashic records. I felt like my ancestors entered the chat. I felt like I healed every ancestral wound by smelling that hoof fungus. And she smells great. She smells kind of sweet. She does smell very much like smudging energy. And So I just let her go and I like inhaled it. And I'm like, I'm just going to like live with this energy. I'm going to live with this fungus. I'm going to let it go into my lungs. We're going to contiguate for a second. And I let it go. I got a little dizzy, admittedly. And I know that some polypores can actually be smoking with tobacco. Some indigenous people have done that. And I was like, I don't know if this is, I'm not saying you guys should do what I did, but I'm saying that when I did it, it was pretty mystical and it was pretty fun. So I let it burn and it was so cool because you could see like it had little chimney holes. Like you could see that the inside was burning and the smoke was coming out, but the top of it had no flame. It looked just like an ember, like a coal or something like that. And I didn't know how to put out the fire. I was like, if this mushroom is known for being able to travel long distances while holding a flame, is it kind of hard to put out? So I hope I didn't disrespect the energies of this mushroom, but I just like dunked it in water and like made it sit there so that it could absorb the water. Cause I'm like, I just my luck over here touting my connection to fungi. And I burned my house down because I let my fomes just run her course a little too long. But nonetheless, amazing experience to do that. I think everyone should have like in their arsenal, in their fanny packs in the forest, everyone should have a fomes fomentarius with them. And I know where, if you're ever in my neck of the woods, I know where we can go and pick some where there's an abundance of these. And they can grow quite large as well. Or if you're doing like an arts and crafts project and you're making a scrapbook horsey, my horse girls making their horsey scrapbooks, and you guys are like, I need a natural way to express the hoof of a horse. Fomes fomentarius got your back. Okay, so that's basically all I have to say about the rundown of those polypores and their appearance. Now let's talk about medicinal properties of artist conch and of the red banded polypore. Now, admittedly, artist conch has a bit more research than the red banded polypore. Like I said, red banded polypore, she's just like, how would you say, Jane Eyre? A little bit too plain to be dazzling people into more research, but she's got what research she has is very promising, and it's lots of anti-cancer, anti-tumor, anti-hepatotactic, which, you know, helps with the liver, the essential, you know, vital organs, things of that nature. And with these polypores, something we just need to lay the groundwork down with polypores in general. If you're like, well, what's the difference between that and a mushroom? I tend to use the word mushroom as a general term for the fruiting body of any fungi, which is not scientifically accurate as of now, but hopefully everyone's going to get on the same page and just be like, let's just use mushroom for every type of fruiting body fungi. Any above ground fungal structure you see, I think most of them anyway, they are showing themselves because that's their sexual organ. That's the mycelium trying to spread itself for genetic advantageous purposes. Polypores, these conchs, these brackets growing on the trees are not technically considered mushrooms, but they're the fruiting bodies that are sporulating and spreading trillions of spores per bracket, per polypore, per mushroom to go someplace else. Because what's happening with a polypore, oftentimes you'll hear people be like, this is a parasitic fungus, as if it's doing something bad to the tree. The thing is, most of, if not all, I'm not going to say all, but the majority of trees that are getting like these specific kinds of fungi, they need those fungi, white and brown rot fungi. Their purpose is to help break down cellulose and lignin in trees. And if you didn't know, trees are one of the most hardy species we have on our planet. They require a specific type of like fungus with lots of varying compounds and digestive enzymes to break them down. This is why we have tree-based petroleum, clean coal. Did we talk about this in the last episode? But all of the oil that we're drilling for across the globe is because of the trees that had yet to have their fungal counterpart to break them down. So these trees just got compacted down into the earth over millions of years, and we're drilling into that. So when you're burning fuel, you're burning this tree energy. And for some reason or another, even though fungi came before vascular plants, these specific plants, these trees developed before there were the fungi for some period of time, before there were the fungi to help break them down. So when you hear about these polypores being parasitic, yes, they're parasitic in the sense that the polypore needs the tree and the tree doesn't necessarily need the polypore to thrive, But part of a forest ecosystem thriving in a whole is there needs to be decomposition of trees. And not every tree that is standing or fallen in the forest is a tree that gets used as timber by humans. And before, when those trees weren't even breaking down, they became the oil we have today. And it's thanks to these white and brown rot fungi that these trees can even break down at all. And depending on the tree, and I'm not so specific on which trees, but some types of trees, like I believe spruce trees, for example, can break down fully into like mulch, into humus, the topsoil of the earth in 50 to 100 years. Pine trees, I know the trees in my boreal neighborhood, 200 to 300 years on their own to break down fully. And that is thanks to these white and brown rot fungi. And you know, it's not just these polypores. It's not just what you see, these visual polypores. This isn't the only thing that's breaking down the tree. There's tons and tons and tons of threads of mycelium within the log eating and breaking down that cellulose and lignin into something that like becomes this delicate structure. You know, sometimes you find those super rotted stumps of tree that you can just like kick over and it's like mulch. That's thanks to that mycelium that's in there. Right. But if these fungi want to continue to live and thrive and live their best life, eventually they're going to run out of tree to eat. So they have to sporulate and go find some more dead wood. So they got to go spread their spores in the wind, go find somebody else. I just need to pause and say, is this same airplane going past my window? Or have I seen like 7 different airplanes in the past 25 minutes going past my house? Do I just not sit in my office and look up at the sky long enough? Anyways. Recentering. Where were we? But yeah, it's that mycelium inside that's working its magic to break down these trees. And when you have these with these different kind of white or brown rot fungi, that's helping to reduce the decomposition time or increase the decomposition time. The trees are breaking down at a faster rate. That's all I'm trying to say. And some trees break down faster than others. I don't know the whole list, but I know like spruce, for example, will break down from 50 to 100 years from if it falls naturally in the forest. A fallen tree or like a deadwood tree will eventually like crumble the longer it stands. Like these corpse trees, the ones that kind of look like frosty or like gray green. There's a lot of those in the forest around me. And then pine trees, different kinds of pine trees will average 200 to 300 years to fully break down into like humus that's spread across the soil. So what I wanted to say about this is, you know, all these different polypores, they are couriering this transition of the tree from the life to the dead, to the next life, from this life to the next life for the tree. And these polypores need to stand the test of time. They are there to break down one of the most difficult to break down organic compounds, or two of those, cellulose and lignin specifically. That's their job. And they need to be able to live and sporulate and move from dead tree to dead tree, because once they break down a dead tree, they've got to go find another one, right? So their fruiting bodies are the polypore, this fruiting body structure that's on the outer part of the tree, that in each individual polypore is delivering trillions upon trillions of spores in its lifetime. So that's just something to keep in mind, is that you're seeing these polypores on the tree, but that's not the full story. There's tons of mycelium inside that's also working its magic. So we're wondering like, okay, these polypores need to live and exist on this dead tree or this fallen dying tree until it's fully broken down. And it's not regrowing every year like a little mushroom that pops out of the ground of delicate mycelium that lives for 2 weeks and then gets eaten by bugs. These polypores are fighting against every known pathogen in the environment, okay? They are there, gladiators, fighting for their lives. And what's more, too, is that you never see tree on the menu, right? No one's ever putting, you know, wood chips as a side, you know, it's just simply too dense. You could rip out a piece of construction paper, have a bite, but I'm not recommending you do so. What is the polypore doing? The polypore is making all of the medicine within every tree that it's breaking down accessible for the ingestion, the ingesting of human beings. So it's a little derivative in one sense that like, yes, these mushrooms are synthesizing these compounds, but where did they get it from? They did not aerate these nutrition. Why am I speaking this accent? But these polypores did not just like absorb it from the air. Okay. They got it from the tree that they're feeding off of. And then it's existing. That's what helps create the fruiting body, right? This mycelium wiggles its way in and then it takes all the nutrition from the tree and gets enough nutrition to manifest as a polypore. Another thing I like to say, and we might have said this in the last episode as well, is just like the term mushroom. I tend to just refer to polypores as mushrooms because it's the fruiting body. For me, any fruiting body of fungi is a mushroom, even though scientists wouldn't be, you know, they'd be technical and they wouldn't use the term mushroom for every single fruiting body. But as far as I'm concerned, if it's sporulating, if it's existing and showing itself to other organisms for the sake of its own survival by way of sexual reproduction, it's a mushroom. Even if these polypores are living for years and years and years versus a little tiny mushroom, like we said. Now, to get into the actual medicinal properties of Artist Conch and the red bracket polypore, these two have a lot of overlap. And Reishi, like we said, Reishi lucidum, the regular Reishi, she's been kind of stealing the show. And what would we say? You know, I was saying before that the red belted polypore, she's a little bit like Jane Eyre, a little bit too plain, a little bit too overlooked to be researched too in depth. But the research that we have, even if it is limited, is promising, especially in the realm of cancer, the alleviation of dis-ease. And not to oversimplify, right before I'm about to oversimplify, the manifestation of dis-ease in the body, it's not always disease, it's dis-ease, exists at different layers, whether that's through histamine, different forms of inflammation, like all disease is some manifestation of inflammation to some varying degree. Polypores, ingesting the different compounds inside of these polypores that are derived from the medicine within trees, are really great at helping our body, our mind, our spirit navigate dis-ease to get to a state of equilibrium again. So it's not surprising to hear that Artist Conch and Red Belted Polypore have so many of the same compounds, and ergo, it would be assumed many overlapping medicinal qualities that you'll find with Reishi. And when we spoke in episode 5, we talked about how Reishi is a panacea, right? We don't like to say any one thing is the cure-all for everything, but Reishi is really, really darn close. And these other two polypores, they're underdogging the same type of vibe. I'm also really interested in learning more about the stories of these mushrooms, maybe from an indigenous perspective. Like, that is not information that's super easy to find on the first couple pages of Google. That's something I've got to go deep diving for, and I hope I find it, so wish me luck. But, you know, some of the things with both of these mushrooms, anti-cancer, anti-tumor, anti-hepatotactic, I think that's how you say it, like promotion of liver function, right? Helping against diabetes. I know Artist Conch is really good. Was it Artist Conch or was it, which one was it? Because I have a whole list here of different types of mushrooms we're going to be talking about that can help with, like we said, womanly things. Maitake actually is good for insulin sensitivity. So those with diabetes might want to look into the use of maitake. And as I'm talking about medicinal purpose, the medicinal use of any of these things, I'm your springboard and you're going on your own deep dive for your own health and maybe talking to a natural practitioner of some sort. I would love to be well-versed enough at some point in my life, and maybe I'll enter that phase where I have enough knowledge to help advise people on which mushroom they should be using. Maybe that's in the cards for me a little later on in my life. I could see me being the crazy, I mean, I already am the crazy mushroom lady, but I could see like 60-year-old me knowing how to heal every one of your ailments with a specific concoction of mushrooms. We'll get there when we get there. It's one step at a time. The Bree Jenkins, I follow her online. She does some cool stuff. She's really into her spiritual energy healing, and she does a lot of way showing for mushrooms as well. And she's blogging, girl. She's inspiring me to get on my blog life and my guest blog life, because here she wrote for wisdom.thealchemistkitchen.com. She wrote a great piece that is specifically about Artist Conch and Red Belted Polypore, and spoke at length about which each of these mushrooms are, what they're used for, and highlighted as well the indigenous use of these mushrooms. But yeah, these mushrooms have great properties. She talked about the red bracket polypore being immunomodulating, anti-tumor, anti-microbe, anti-inflammatory, anti-diabetic, anti-histamine, circulatory stimulant, and emetic properties. Helping with cramping and pain, reducing headaches, reducing fevers, headaches, and chills. You know, all of these, like I said, another airplane. There has to be something going on, you guys. Like, I don't mean to just like interject and fly out of my flow state, but maybe this is just the flight path for airplanes, and COVID's over, sister. So maybe there's always airplanes going out this much, and I've never sat here and been in a position to notice. Anyways, this whole episode is like mushrooms, and look, and there's an airplane. but yeah, both of these mushrooms, and rest assured that polypores in general just have a lot of overlapping similarities because they have access to the same type of or similar overlapping nutrients from different types of trees. And I would recommend, like I said, you doing your own deep dive after, and also ask yourself, what do you feel a calling for? What do you feel a calling to use? What is the vibe in your body? Does your body want that artist conch? Or does your body want a little bit of that red belted polypore? Does that body want some reishi? And the thing too is, like, yes, I can say, hey guys, I'm working on it, by the way. I'm working to get a promo code from Rainbow Mushrooms because that's the only rainbow tincture company that's the only tincture company for mushrooms I ever talk about. But this isn't just about me telling you where you can go drop $40, $50 on a mushroom tincture that's going to last you a month. It's also about teaching you guys how to go out and properly identify something that you can use for the sake of your own longevity and quality of life. And it's not always about going to Whole Foods or Erewhon and buying a $40 pint of water. I want you to be able to go and be like, oh, the forest is offering this to me. What do I do with it? And how do I know this will help me, right? And that's why I wanted to talk about these polypore underdogs. Like, I can find both of these. I can go outside of my forest and go pick enough to make tinctures for a village for several months. That's how much nature provides. And I want to remind people of that. One of the things about the language of nature is realizing how abundant it really is. And it's, you don't just have to be the it girl with the rainbow mushroom tinctures, okay? Although we should all strive to be that, because Rainbow Mushrooms is actually such an amazing company. Their tinctures have changed my life and have inspired me to want to make my own, which I guess would be a good time for us to talk a little bit about tinctures, decoctions, the science of it all. Because I'm sure if this is your first or second time kind of hearing about making tinctures, I mean, there's a lot of layers of intimidation when it comes to an end product like that. Like, first of all, properly identifying a polypore. And might I just say, I have yet to come across any information about polypores, like anyone that is as toxic as like an Amanita phalloides or an Amanita verna or verosa. Typically these mushrooms have the amatoxins or the Geromitra esculenta uncooked, right? We've hit up all those mushrooms. I have yet to hear about a polypore that has some equivalent. It wouldn't be an amatoxin, but I don't know, maybe there's a type of polypore that grows on a specific type of tree that has a specific type of compound that could cause seizures and death or something. But usually these polypores you're finding in the forest, they might be kind of inedible because they're too tough. But, you know, typically you're not going to be running into the same kind of issues with poisoning as you would with just like regular fruiting mushrooms popping out of the ground. With that said, don't cook something and make a tincture with something when you have no idea what it is. Go through the steps to figure out what it is. Be confident in your identification if you're going to go and do this yourself, right? Be responsible, be respectful. But if you're going out into the forest, first of all, let's just talk about the intention of going out and finding something. Respect is such an important thing. The more I learn the language of nature, the more I'm out in nature, my attitude towards the intelligence of the trees and the plants and the fungi around me, their awareness of me has grown so much. My understanding of their intellect has grown, and that has allowed me to revere all living organisms, even if they are not a human being. And what you'll see across different cultures is there are ways to upset the forest. And that's by going into the forest and taking more than your fill, not saying thank you, and not having some level of respect for nature when it is nature that is all sustaining, right? So when you go out into the forest, be respectful, say thank you. I really mean it. Even hug the tree. I am that girl that says, hug that tree. If you're going to take a polypore from that tree, you acknowledge what it took for that polypore to grow and that you are taking, you know, you're benefiting off of the decay of that tree. You know what I mean? So you get your mushrooms, you take it home. Typically, you're going to want to chop up any polypore that you're finding, whether it's turkey tail, artist conch, red belted polypores, real reishi, birch polypore. I haven't talked about birch polypore, but birch polypore is another one. You're going to want to cut them up into small pieces, right? And then you're going to want to dehydrate them, and you can do that naturally, or you can get a dehydrator. Dehydrators are very effective, and I might recommend dehydrating. Just And this is dehydrating if you're not going to make the tincture right away. You don't necessarily have to do this, but if you're looking to have you're not looking to make the tinctures like making 100 tinctures at once. Like maybe you want to make some over the winter. You're going to want to dehydrate your full batch of mushrooms and then weigh them. And I'm not going to get into the equations of how much mushroom versus, you know, there are YouTube videos for that. So I'm going to leave it a little general. But you say you go and get a bounty of your polypores, your mushrooms, dehydrate them, cut them into the smallest pieces as possible. And then when you're ready to make your tinctures or make your teas, there's a few ways that it can go. You could just take your dehydrated mushrooms in the middle of the forest and rehydrate them and cook a tea with it or add them to your soups and let that flavor profile and the medicinal properties enter your soup. Or if you want to make a decoction, you can just boil them, like a large sum of mushrooms in a bunch of water, and boil it down until you get kind of like a syrup and then store that. But my favorite way, and a way that you know you're going to ensure the preservation of that tincture, is by doing dual extraction. So the way that that is done, very generally, but I think knowing generally first allows you to get over that hurdle. Like you've just gone and far harvested for the mushrooms and you're pretty sure you're 99% sure you got the right ones. Now you want to make your extract, okay? You want to make your tincture. You're going to get an 80 proof alcohol, absolute vodka. Go get a high proof alcohol of vodka. And you're going to soak your mushrooms for 2 to 6 weeks in that vodka. Soak it. And then you're going to save that vodka. You're going to save that vodka and you're going to strain your mushrooms with like a cheesecloth or something like that, right? Save the vodka that has extracted certain compounds that will not be extracted just from a decoction from water. You're going to re-add those mushrooms that were sitting in that vodka into water and make a decoction with it. And then you're going to mix your vodka and mix your decoction together and discard or compost the mushroom and put them into little tincture bottles. And if you want to add a little maple syrup, you want to add a little something to sweeten it, that is for you to decide. That's the nice thing with it is typically you're going to see people experimenting all across the board and experimenting with their ratios and making more medicinal or potent tinctures by like experimenting with their ratios of liquid to mushroom and things like that. And there's tons of information online, but I just wanted to let you know, like, that's the general gist of it. Extracting certain compounds with alcohol and extracting the rest through water and mixing them together in little tincture bottles and then saving them. And that's basically what I wanted to say about polypores. It's like, keep your mind, keep your third eye, keep your heart open to different types of polypores in the forest and know that they really are these portals to medicinal freedom. Really, they are. And that's what I wanted to say about that. Now should we do women's health? Women's health. I kind of wanted to just do some spitfire round of stuff. Like I had a feeling like I could bring up some of these things if you're someone who menstruates, has been or is getting pregnant, is postpartum, is perimenopausal or menopausal, you're going to be dealing with your own unique variety of symptoms. So I thought we could go through some of the research I found and talk about like rapid fire round, different types of mushrooms that you could be taking or look into yourself. Like I said, you're doing the deep dive for your own health. We're springboarding here. You're deep diving later. But I want to do like rapid fire round and maybe your brain is going to synchronistically, intuitively latch onto something I'm about to say. But I thought we could make it through the list of different types of mushrooms and mushroom blends. I'm going to give a little intuitive advice about what I think might be a good thing for you to look out for when trying to salve yourself from the symptoms of PMS and postpartum life or menopausal life, because girl, it's a wild ride. The cyclical nature of a female reproductive organ body is really something that we should not take lightly. And when I started taking reishi and cordyceps, because we talked about this, right? In episode 5, I spoke about my unique relationship to reishi. I took it not with my PMS in mind. I didn't take it with womanhood. I didn't take it with my womanhood in mind. I took it in mind with symptoms that any person could have, right? Wanting more energy, wanting to mitigate stress, wanting to have some protection against my neurodivergent stimulation. all of those things, right? Living my expat life, like we've talked about this. And if you're more interested in learning about that, listen to episode 5. We talked about that in through that lens, but I didn't really bring up reproductive health at all when it came to mushrooms. But when I was reading about which mushrooms are really great for PMS, I was like, oh, look, reishi and cordyceps. Those are amazing. And I already take them. And actually, it's funny, I was reading about this. I already knew because I haven't been taking super high medicinal doses of reishi the way I was before, but I do take really high medicinal doses of reishi several days leading up to my moon, right? My red friend. I'm going to just use discretion for the sake of, I guess that's what I feel comfortable with. And I don't know if that's internalized colonialism, internalized patriarchy, whatever ideology, whatever. Let's just refer to it as moon. It's more mystical that way. And it doesn't make periods dirty, as I don't like to talk about the cycle being dirty or gross or things like that. It's a beautiful time. And I think the moon signals intuitive power and portalness that menstruating can elicit. So when your moon's coming round, the tides are high, you're feeling all sorts of type of ways, and reishi and cordyceps are actually really good for that. We'll talk a little bit more about that in depth. So just listen up here. We're going to go through several different things here, and I'm going to name the ailment. I'm going to name the mushroom, and we're going to move on. This is Mushroom After Hours. I can do what I want. Okay. And then again, maybe for future legal purposes, I'm not a doctor. I'm just, like I said, I'm the springboard. You're the deep dive. Okay. You're the scuba diver of your own life. Candida yeast. Did you know yeast is also a fungus, but it's the kind that signals in our body that we have an imbalance in our gut typically, or there's an imbalance and overgrowth of bacteria. It's likely due to stress, there's many factors, but it could be stress. It could be our diets. It could be overconsumption of sugar because candida and those bacteria that are obsessed with us eating sugar is partially why we get addicted to sugar, because sugar makes bacteria grow prolifically and not necessarily in the best ways, which is also partially why, I know this isn't fungi related directly, but you know when people say like you should just try to abstain from eating super processed like refined sugar foods for 2 to 3 weeks and you'll notice your cravings for it disappears almost entirely? It's because you have killed off or reduced the colony of those bacteria in your gut that have an affinity for that sugar. But nonetheless, for candida, there's 4 mushrooms that are up here. Don't be surprised. Reishi makes a list like every time. I'm not mad about it, so you shouldn't be either. But candida, you got some overgrowth of yeast. Look for reishi, shiitake, oyster, and turkey tail. I'm not sure in what dosage. I'm not sure in what percentage. I'm not sure if there is a blend that specifically exists out there for yeast. But if you've got some candida, you might want to look into those 4 being a part of your diet. Breast health, reishi. the cancer research, I mean, there's been a lot of cancer research done with reishi, but one of the really big ones is breast cancer research. We talked about that in episode 5. Breast health and reishi, best friends, BFFs. They made friendship bracelets at summer camp together. That's what I'm saying. You might also want to look into shiitake, maitake, and turkey tail. And don't we remember the infamous story of Paul Stamets' mother who had stage 4 terminal cancer? I believe, but don't quote me on it, I believe it was breast cancer. She started taking medicinal dose of turkey tail and her stage 4 malignant breast cancer, or at least it was cancer, right? It disappeared. She went into remission. And I don't think my hunch says she wasn't on other chemotherapy. She was using this as a chemo preventative and pretty dope. I had a family member who had to go through chemotherapy and I recommended turkey tail to them and they didn't listen to me, but probably because I look like the crazy mushroom girl in the family. And that's why I make the podcast here to people who actually want to hear what I have to say. There's a mushroom called Agaricus blase, and this one is good for the womb. Cervical, uterine, and endometrial cancers have research that shows that Agaricus blase, and what was the common name for this? God mushroom, sun mushroom, blase. Yeah, this one is called almond mushroom, mushroom of the sun, God's mushroom, mushroom of life, royal sun agaricus. The list goes on. It looks kind of like your run-of-the-mill brown button mushroom, kind of. You can look it up yourself. But yeah, this one can be good for a chemo preventative for these other sensitive reproductive organs. I'll leave that one at that. Postpartum life, y'all. Cordyceps, chaga, and reishi. Chaga and reishi comes up like every time for reproductive health. And chaga also. The only thing you're going to want to look at whether you're pregnant or postpartum and there's another being involved, you might want to talk to your doctor, talk to a practitioner. I mean, I'm probably going to take mushroom supplements if I get pregnant again. I don't know how I would not, but I will be doing research beforehand. But nonetheless, when you're taking cordyceps and you're taking reishi, you're taking all these immunomodulating, stress relieving, and cordyceps is really great for boosted energy levels and the like, that you're taking and eating those and breastfeeding, right? If you're one who breastfeeds, then you're also giving those amazing compounds. Like, you're compounding it. Like, not only does the breast milk have all these amazing compounds for the baby, but then also there's also these mushroom compounds that are getting mixed in. So it's an amazing cocktail for both you and your child, you and your baby. Okay, pregnancy. The only thing I found was reishi. However, there's a lack of research here, and I'm not surprised. Female bodies and pregnant bodies and research with supplements. And mushroom supplements, like, name a more minority intersection, minority-tized intersection. And it's under-researched. I'm not surprised that reishi comes up with this one. But again, I think there's also some trepidation and mycophobia there, that there might be something wrong that could happen to the fetus from ingesting mushrooms during pregnancy. I'm going to leave it at that. I haven't done any more research than that. I said what I said. Next, we've got cordyceps for fertility. Cordyceps sinensis specifically, because there are several types of cordyceps that can be great for libido and great for boosting your energy levels. But this one in particular has research done for improvements for people trying to conceive, for female bodies trying to increase their fertility, and also success with IVF. Cordyceps sinensis. The caterpillar fungus, if you're looking for this common name for it. Now, menopause, and we're going to put menopause and PMS kind of together. And not because these have the same exact cycle to them, but reishi and cordyceps come up for the both of these again. And I wouldn't like to simplify menopause or perimenopause to a longer version of PMS, because there are other symptoms that come up. And I was looking at some diagrams before I recorded today about the nature of hormones during these cycles. And they're pretty intense. And there's a lot of different hormones that are playing off of one another. I haven't gone to medical school or done the research to know the intricacies of it. But I do know that the reishi and the cordyceps can help alleviate the stress that accompanies and the lack of energy that can accompany both of those times. Now, I do know a little bit about PMS specifically, but when you are about to get your period and people say, oh, I'm sorry, my hormones, they're all over the place when you're going to menstruate or you're going to get your moon, right? We're talking about it being the moon. When your moon's coming, you just tell your friends, I'm sorry, just like my hormones are all over the place. The thing is, the majority of those hormones, they're actually like no place. They drop off. It's like a cliff. It's a cliff like right before that initiates your moon. And that lack of progesterone, it's a lack of progesterone and a lack of estrogen and a lack of something else. Was it follicle stimulating hormone was the one that doesn't drop? But yeah, the good large chunk of those hormones are dropping off all at once. You're plummeting, you're falling into your moon, right? And what also happens is, and I don't know like the dance between every single hormone production and all of the different cycles that play upon one another, but I do know that progesterone is really important with your production of serotonin. And when progesterone's gone, serotonin's also trying to exit the chat for a minute, which is why we despair, we feel anxious. And also with menopausal or perimenopausal women, a lot of their anxiety is attributed to a drop off in progesterone, which also affects serotonin levels. But the nice thing, as far as we know, is that cordyceps is really good with slowing the decay, rather, of the synthesis of serotonin. So by that, I mean serotonin sticks around a little longer when the progesterone's getting cut off. Then this, what also happens here is something called MAO breakdown, which is monoamine oxidase. And this is also what breaks down serotonin specifically. But taking cordyceps can also just help. It's like a little shield against that MAO breakdown. The MAO was like, serotonin, you gotta go. And serotonin was like, hey, I brought my bodyguard today, and it was cordyceps. So I know that sounds very scientific. But nonetheless, that's something I want you all to consider with both PMS and with perimenopause and menopause. The other one we had too before, we were talking about PCOS. PCOS. That also has to do, PCOS and insulin sensitivity are connected, right? Maitake is written here for PCOS because maitake acts against insulin sensitivity. And that article I read too from Brie also said that red-belted polypore is anti-diabetic, which has to do with insulin. So I'm not sure if there's like a Venn diagram overlap there with maitake and other polypores. Not that maitake is a polypore, it's not. But polypore overlap with their medicinal properties. But nonetheless, and also written here, reishi may reduce pelvic inflammatory disease or inflammation of the pelvis, uterine fibroids, endometriosis, and things of the like. So reishi and maitake might be a good blend for you. So that's the end of our rapid fire round of women's health and mushrooms. I had one more thing written here too, is that cordyceps affects the adrenals and the production of cortisol, estrogen, and progesterone. So all the more to add to our point that maybe you need cordyceps in your life if you're drowning in your womanly hormones. Now, the last segment of today's episode, and I think it's good I saved it for the last because it doesn't directly have as much to do with mushrooms as everything else we talked about. So if you only came here for the mushroom information and you're ready to dip, okay, peace out. I guess no shade. Don't stay if you don't want to like figure out how to recover your inner artist and your inner creator. But I do feel a calling to talk about this. And it's funny, I've talked on my own here for a long time. And I think I was putting off this episode because I was like, I don't know enough. I don't have enough to say. But then I open my mouth and all of the words and the mushrooms fall out. But yeah, we're going to talk about The Artist's Way, mostly because this is a really, really powerful book. And it had a lot to do with future mycelium. And I see a lot of overlap with my different clients because I'm a life coach and a weight shower as well. So I have different clients who are looking to do something similar to me, or they're looking to uncover an energy that is going to give them agency with their direction and purpose in life, right? And The Artist's Way is a book that I have several of my clients working with right now. And we've worked on it sort of together, but I've also kind of basically finished it. But this is the thing with The Artist's Way. It's titled The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity by Julia Cameron, the classic course in discovering and recovering your creative self. And the New York Times called Julia Cameron the queen of change. In Reishi's called the queen of the forest. So two queens, two different modalities, we're out here living. And, you know, when I was attracted to mushrooms in the beginning, what I liked about it was that it was reconnecting me with nature in my own personal and subjective way. And what that allowed me to unlock was a deeper sense of connection to nature and also a deeper connection to myself, disconnecting from the things that keep me distracted and reconnecting to the things that help bring my own personal truths to the surface so that I can feel more self-confident. I can feel like I can trust myself because I'm not gaslighting myself. I'm not denying myself. I'm not appeasing other people at the sake of harming my own mental health, my own spiritual autonomy, and things like that. So that's all a roundabout way of saying that mushrooms have really helped me reconnect in a way that feels bigger than my ego and bigger than my own programming that was telling me I had to be a certain way or look a certain way or purport myself in a certain way for the sake of certain cultures, right? And then the second thing was I needed to take it a step further. Like mushrooms had helped me over the years from moving to Norway and being by myself. As we talked about in one of the episode or another, I discussed how moving to Norway reconnected me with nature because I didn't know the culture of Norwegians and all that stuff. But taking it a step further is not only do we need to have our own subjective connection to nature and thus a sense of calm and peace with our own existence and our own bodies, but we're also meant to be creative individuals. We are creative beings. The majority of us have hands. At least all of us have a mind that can bring things into reality. And it is our compulsion to do so. And it is my own personal belief that it is a form of worship to our creator, that divine energy to courier that creation through our own hands and through our own passions and through the gifts that are given to us. Just like anything we find in nature is a gift, the psychic, spiritual, creative inner world gives us all sorts of ideas and insights that are also gifts that we can manifest in this realm. And that's what also drives us with a sense of purpose, is envisioning something or having the hope for something and taking the agency in whatever capacity we can to bring that to the earth while we are alive, because we're here for such a short amount of time. Certainly we're here for some reason. And I usually feel like that sense of reason, the sense of purpose, comes from creating things. But it's hard to create things if you don't feel connected to something larger than your ego. Because when we're only creating from ego, from lower self energy, from self-sabotage energy, we're looking for validation from other people maybe. You know, all of these things tie into a concoction of something that's not sustainable, something that's not life-giving, something that's not nourishing for us. And I don't think any of us who are looking to further our physical health want to sabotage that by psychically and spiritually sabotaging ourselves by acting from ego, from a lack of nourishment of the inner creative self, and cultivating the garden of that spiritual autonomy and, you know, kind of nature worship as well. I think that follows a lot of that. We need those things. All those things are really important pillars. Like, there's so many different kinds of pillars that uphold our psyche and our sense of connection to our own personal narratives. So a connection to nature and a recovery of the inner artist are two really powerful things that I have felt are the most useful and most important thing for me, and is why you're listening to me talk today. I didn't come here to talk for no reason. Now, the artist's way was really, really nice. It sort of just plopped in my lap. It popped into my psyche and sort of confirmed evidentially for me that I was meant to work with it by way of it being spoken about in different groups I was in Zoom sessions online, and also with an older female mentor who recommended it to me. So I bought it, and it really sucked me in and called me out and dragged me through the mud and also rinsed me off and gave me a hug and made me feel like I was enough. And I know that before I did this course, a lot of what I was looking for online didn't just have to do with increasing my own knowledge of the things I was interested in, but it's also to look for other people that have something that I want to have in myself. But you'll never get it just from paying attention to another person. And living vicariously through another creator is great for inspiration, but you can't rob yourself of that time and energy by way of trying to envision being them. And that was also something that was an important lesson for me with doing this course. So if you feel like you're like, I just don't know how to get out of my own way and to be my own friend in the co-creation of my own life, I'd recommend this book. So it goes through 12 chapters, and each chapter idyllically would be done in a week, more or less. And they each chapter builds off of one another. So we have week one is recovering a sense of safety. Then you recover a sense of identity, then a sense of power, then a sense of integrity, followed by possibility, abundance, connection, strength, compassion, self-protection, autonomy, and faith. And they all build off of one another because they're like the different building blocks that you need. And I don't think it could have been written in a better way. I think Julia Cameron really had divine guidance when she wrote this, and it's been used by so many different successful people in the world. Some of the most amazing and successful playwriters, screenwriters, directors, authors, artists have used this book to get unstuck and to get out of their own way. So forewarning, one of my favorite pastimes is disrupting the foundation of my psyche to become a better person at the cost of ego death and ego dissolution and feeling completely destroyed as a person. But that's kind of my vibe. But if you're like, I don't know if I'm prepared for that, well, just brace yourself, because you deserve to go through the fire to be a phoenix rising from the ashes. But that's kind of what this book does. And I found the first four chapters were like great. I was hitting them. I was doing all the exercises, because it's like you read the chapter and you do the exercises and you write in your journal every day and you create an artist date every week to make some kind of art or to hold that commitment to yourself, right? And then I hit chapter 5, 6, 7, and 8. And I was like, what does this mean? Because it all came down to believing in a supportive God. And this book does ask you to believe in a God, but that God can be nature, it can be divine energy, it can be something far removed from the cultural corruption of institutionalized religion, okay? It doesn't have to be, anthropomorphized angry man in the sky god. It can be the god with 99 names or whatever, okay? So it's an open-ended, but you can't believe in nothing. You have to, it's foundational to your creative process to believe that there is an unseen force that is helping you. Otherwise, you're trying to take on too much control. This is what I used to do. You get obsessed with perfectionism. You worry because you can't see what's happening in front of you. And then it affects your executive functioning and you don't do anything. And then you don't accomplish anything. You don't take any sacred action towards your goals. So it does ask that you believe in a supportive God. Now, I've always had my faith. I've always had a belief in the unseen realms. Obviously, I give off that vibe. I'm giving off Birkenstocks, shops at the farmer's market, wears malachite bracelet vibes. I threw my voice. I get it. But I got to chapter 5 and it was specifically about believing in a supportive God. What does that mean? It means believing that the force that is with me is helping me in ways I cannot see. And I've always superficially believed that, but believing it on a level of depth to the point where I can release my own sense of control, that I can unlearn that survival technique, that coping mechanism, and get out of my own way, because that has really affected my ability to accomplish anything I've wanted to accomplish, right? Believing in the support of God and recover, and ergo being, when you believe in that, then you can recover a sense of abundance. You can recover a sense of connection. You can recover a sense of strength. But I had to stop there, and I was stuck on those chapters for longer than I'd like to admit, because I was like, wow, I have a core false belief that God doesn't support me and I have to do it all myself. And if you come from poverty, if you come from a household where you had to take on responsibility, and also I was the oldest child and things like that, you had this sense of the world is against me. I have to fend for myself. You know, you get these beliefs as a form of protection from a young age. I always believed there was only a very narrow way that I could make money. I had to work so hard and work tirelessly, you know, grind culture kind of, but working minimum wage jobs and doing things I didn't like to do. And that was the noble pursuit. And that was the way you made money. And that was the way God was going to give me my living. And this book forced me to be like, hey, if you keep believing in that, you're not going to get anywhere. That is like your teenage self working at a country club vibe. Because I did work at a country club when I was a teenager. You're not there anymore. Like, you're living a life where you have a lot more free time to explore your spiritual autonomy, to explore your passions and interests, and have quiet country kind of anonymously. Like, that isn't you anymore. So I've been continually affirming that for myself. And it's just like, this is the thing. You do this book, it forces you to question all of this, karma, all of this history and all this knowledge stored in your psyche, in your bones, in your muscles. And I'm 27 years young, but you know, up until reading this book, there was 26 and a half, you know, freshly 27 years of existing in this world a certain way. And then being like, you know what? I think I want to exist in a different way now. And then you're like, your psyche and your subconscious and your inner predator is like, no, we don't do that here. And you keep showing up every day and being like, yes, we do that here. Yes, I am ordering something different for myself. Yes, I am focusing on other things. And it forces you to let go of other things, because when you want to recover, you know, these parts of yourself that can create beautiful things and create magical things and impact people's lives positively, you're not just recovering a skill. You're killing off parts of yourself, like trimming and pruning a tree or a plant. It's painful. So I don't know if I'm painting this book as something that's an enjoyable process, but it's a worthy process. And part of the way I was programmed in this world was to help other people see their worth. And the way that I can do that is by better seeing my own worth myself, right? So I have a decent amount of clients, and I'd say over half of them right now are working with this book. And I guess at the as we're wrapping up this chapter, and this me talking about the Artist's Way was not a pitch intentionally for the other services that I offer. But I know that I'm working on more accessible offerings for you guys, which is why I'm logging off for a little while after this. But part of why I show up on the internet and make what I make is because I am a coach. I'm a life coach. I'm a way shower. I have been working for 5 years with different clients consistently to uncover these hidden aspects of the self, so that they can enjoy their lives and move through their lives with purpose and alignment. And there's all sorts of people kind of doing something similar to that on the internet. And I guess I'm doing it through mushroom education, but I just want to put it out there that if you feel a calling to work with someone and maybe, and this isn't to poo-poo on therapists, like go to your therapist too, but if you've been sort of like, I need someone who's going to help me see the things, see all the things about what I need, and you feel a calling, then you can email me or you can hit me up. I offer a free 30-minute consultation and we just get to talking and people just come in and work with me when they're meant to work with me. And if they're not, they don't. And that's also okay. It's just that I have been very quiet about it on my platform for a while, mostly because I didn't make Future Mycelium to be about coaching, but it's something that follows me everywhere I go. And it's actually always been the path of least resistance for me. And so it's like honoring myself to bring that up and to let people know that like, maybe you're listening to me just for this mushroom stuff, but sometimes you're listening to me and vibing because there's more there. And so I felt the need to vocalize that here today on this day in order to just vocalize that, I guess. So I'm going to leave it at that. But to go back to The Artist's Way in general, I really recommend this book. It is written in a way that is nurturing. Like, yes, it's forcing you to reconcile things that feel hard, but it's written in a way that makes you feel validated. And I'll never go back. Like, there are practices and things that this book will teach you, different kinds of tools to navigate your psyche so that you can live with more integrity and keep your promises to yourself and just feel like you won't self-sabotage. You want to get from A to B and you want to be thriving once you get there, you might want to try this book out. And the other thing too is like, maybe you're like, she's been talking about The Artist's Way, but like, I'm not a painter. I don't do pastel. I'm not a sculptor. Okay. Michelangelo is not a direct descendant. We don't know her. That's okay. Creating is about something as simple as making dinner, reorganizing your office space, watering your plants, moving them around so that they don't get scorched in the sun, braiding your hair, trimming your nails. You know, you can infuse creativity into anything. And although I love to paint and I like to like make traditional art, quote unquote, art and creating doesn't have to be about making something abstract that gets sold for millions of dollars. It's as simple as folding the pages of your book in a way that you'll remember so you don't get lost in your chapters. And people would be like, why do you fold? Wow, I've never thought to fold my pages in my book that way to remember. That's very creative. Everyone can be creative. I truly believe that. So what have we talked about today? We've talked about housekeeping. We've talked about polypores more in depth, our underdog polypores. We've talked about women's health, and we've talked about hyping you up to be the best artist that you can be, to live in alignment and integrity with the person that you're envisioning you wish you could be while you're still alive, because it is totally possible and I believe in you. Just the fact that you've tuned into my energy today tells me something about what you got cooking in your own fire, in your own spirit, you know what I'm saying? And I'm rooting for you every step of the way, because I truly believe that when we get in alignment, and I know this sounds like a little culty, like The Secret, but really think about how, I got a good analogy for you as a parting gift. Think about a whale. You know how much food a whale has to eat every single day? Like they got the hearts the size of a Toyota Corolla, and they eat what, krill? Like they got a pretty narrow amount of food that they be eating, okay? They get fed every day. Those whales are eating, okay? And you think, no, there's not enough krill for all those whales. No. Not only that, think about how, what if you had to feed a whale every day? What if you had to make sure every whale got enough krill every day? You couldn't do it, but somehow it's getting done. You understand what I'm saying? My psyche just dropped off, maybe because I wanted you to marinate in that. But you know, this is the same thing with ideas and abundance. Abundance is there. You have to be willing and ready and able to receive it. And you have to feel in alignment and be brave and go dive and do the thing that you feel like you want to do. There is a reward for taking action towards the things that you feel in your heart. Even if other people are like, that won't work. I don't know why you're doing that. And they're giving you what Julia Cameron calls wet blanket messages. You know, sometimes if you share your sapling or your seedling of an idea with somebody who just like has not recovered any sense of creativity in themselves, they'll poo-poo all over it. And it's basically like they ripped the seed out of the ground and threw it in the trash. So be careful about who you share your ideas with. But, you know, that's not how it's supposed to work. If you're believing that you've planted that seed in fertile soil and you're going to see to it that you take care of that idea, and even if it's a new species of plant no one's ever heard of before, but you've got that seed, you know, no single snowflake looks the same. Nobody's inner plant is the same either. Everyone's got their own unique species. I think mine would be some species of Calathea, a new emergent species of Calathea. I have actually got a bunch of new houseplants. I've been into doing my mom planting stuff. I've gotten some begonias and some Calatheas, and I got a ginseng tree. And then I got a bunch of little random. I got a couple succulents. I got a bunch of cacti. I've always had cacti because you can neglect them forever and they'll still survive. But I wanted to be the kind of plant mom that is like paying attention to making things grow. The outer reflects the inner, am I right? So I'm happy I finally brought these plants into my home, and I want to see to it that I take care of them. And yeah, I might not be able to feed a whale every single day, but I am able to water my plants every few days, and I think that's enough for me. So with all that being said, thanks so much for tuning into the first season of the Future Mycelium podcast. Thanks for listening to me today take you across the scape, take you across the surface of the underside of a polypore, for diving into its pores with me. Thanks for reflecting on where you're at in your own life by listening. And as we take our break, keep a promise to me that you're going to send me your foraging stories. You're going to send me a picture of your mushrooms, gosh darn it. No, but that you're going to be kind to yourself. Have compassion and believe that the visions you're having about where you want to go, what you want to be, what you want to be doing, it could happen. We could make it happen. You could make it happen. You know what I'm saying? So for the next 1 to 2 months, when Future Mycelium's not around, even though I'm not that important, I'm just one little drop in a big pool. Try to keep the momentum going. Keep the mushroom fun going. The spring has sprung. The next couple of months, there's going to be more mushroom picking. I hope you find your morels. Be outdoors. Get your hands dirty. You can only listen to so much theory. You can listen to as many podcasts as you want, but it's nothing in comparison to going out to the forest and looking for something yourself. You know what? Today, my son was out in the forest. He gave me a stick, and you know what it had on it? Some type of Ascomycete tiny little orangey cup fungi on it. And he was like, Mama, here's a stick. And he didn't see it even. I was like looking at this orange fungi for like 15 minutes while he was putzing around in the forest. It was amazing. Serendipitous meetups with nature and all of its species. All right. I'm going to sign off here. Thanks for bearing with me as for wrapping up the season when my technology is obviously failing me. And I will see you all in season 2. Take care. Bye. Before we sign off for real, of course, we have to thank our sources. First off, starting with our articles, journal articles, and website blog posts, we have Ingredient Spotlight, Artist Conch, and Red Belted Conch by Bree Jenkins on October 14th, 2021. And that's from wisdom.thealchemistkitchen.com. Next up, we have Red Belted Mushroom, A Powerful Ally from www.ashandthor.ca.com. There was no author or no date for that one. Then we have 10 Medicinal Mushroom Benefits for Women's Hormone Health, posted by Aliza Headley on July 25th, 2018 from teelixir.com. Next up, we have Medicinal Mushrooms and Menopause, All the Benefits of Mycotherapy for Women's Well-Being from Fungi Energia y Salute. And that's from Fungi, F-U-N-G-H-I, E-N-E-R-G-I-A-E, English E, S-A-L-U-T-E. Next, we have Mushrooms, the Super Veg for Women, and that's from OptiMYZ.com. That was published by Michelle Armstrong on January 10th, 2020. And now next up, a bunch of YouTube videos that helped inform this episode today. Medicinal Mushroom Tinctures, a step-by-step guide from Grow Cycle, the YouTube channel. Next up, we have Brewing Tea from the Wild Red Belted Polypore, Phomatopsis pinnacola, from Garrett Kopp, aka Birch Boy or Birch Boy's Chaga. Next up, we have Red Belted Polypore, Super Medicine from Nature by Mark Young's YouTube channel. Next up, Artist Conch, Medicinal Mushroom Mysteries from Herbal Jedi. Then we have Artist Conch Fungi, Identification, Making Tea and Tincture from Edible Wild Food. Then on over here, we have Red Belted Polypore. No, the last one we have here is Paul with the Red Belted Polypore from Fungi Imperfecti, aka Paul Stamets. Thank you so much to all of our sources.